Welcome to Guys We Fucked. Guys We Fucked.
Guys We Fucked.
I'm Christina.
I'm Corinne.
We're sorry about last night.
The anti-slut shaming podcast. I never stop.
Hey, fuckers. Welcome to another episode of Guys We Fucked. Did you have a spooky Halloween?
Ah, it's the anti-slut shaming podcast. I'm Corinne.
I'm Christina.
I was like, we can just skip that part, but people are still confused.
Oh, so. Yeah.
Yeah. Halloween was spooky. It was fun.
It's
a great time. I still have my character's tattoo on because...
Who are you? Tell the group, Corinne.
Yes, I was Frankenfooter, and I know a lot of people are like, who's that? Since you're 24 and life's a dream.
Who the fuck is Frankenfooter?
Who is Frankenfooter? It's a character from a movie called Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Everyone knows that movie.
No, they don't.
Of it, at least.
No, they don't. It's
shut your mouth.
It's horrifying.
Oh, God.
It's a cult classic from the 70s. And if you haven't watched it, I highly recommend you watching it.
Yeah, Tim Curry is really hot at that part.
Mm.
Damn, there's something about a man in a corset and makeup that just makes me very aroused.
Oh, I love transvestites. That's why I love Eddie Izzard.
Yeah. He's a hot,
very
hottie, hottie.
Very into it. And Christina, tell the class what you were.
I was a fun nun.
Like a fun nun? Yeah.
Well, it's funny. Steven and I got our costumes not on Halloween websites. We got them.
Oh, yes.
My costume was a latex nun's outfit.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like a sluttier version, you know, some more sexually explorative. And it was just like black underwear and then, you know, latex, like long sleeve with, my butt hanging out, all that stuff. And it was at a sex website, like a sex toy website and sex costumes. So I was really proud. And then he got a priest robe from an actual priest robe website.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was very hot, very sexy, very much arousing. And then he got this on this like gay daddy website. He purchased a leather mask and leather gloves.
Nice.
So he was just going to be like a creepy thing. I don't really know what.
Right.
But it was so hot. The gloves on the website he got him, it was like, smack your gay daddy in the face with these fucking gloves. And I was like, yes.
Nice.
And then... fucking glamour puss. I wore my Halloween costume and he wore his and he put the mask on. He put the mask on right after the show. And I was like, we need to go and fuck. Like, I don't even want to hang out with anybody. I'm very tired too. But it was so hot. And I made him like smack my ass with those gloves on. And it took the sting out of the smack, but I still experienced the weight of it, which is what I like about it. Like,
right.
I like getting smacked around. But every once in a while, it'll like sting.
It stings, yeah.
And I'm like, ow, not hot. And it kind of takes everybody out of the moment because I
especially
scream.
If you react like that.
It is how I do. And so, but with these gloves, man, I'll be your fucking gay daddy all day and all night. It was so hot. Oh my God. It was like the hottest sex ever. Oh, and I was like, keep the mask on. I wanted to keep the robe on too, but it was
oh my
hot.
God. Anytime I've had sex in like a mask or a wig, I'm always like, okay, I'm getting a headache now. I need to take this off.
We never do. And I was like, this is great.
I've had sex in a Katy Perry wig.
Oh, that's fun.
It was
what kind of wig? Like, was it a
the
curl?
The blue one.
Blue straight bob?
The blue longer one.
Oh, yes.
So that was fun.
Yeah, you guys put a wig on and fuck.
But not for too long because you need to air out your head.
Your scalp area. Yeah. But it was I was like, you know what? This is opening up a gate into some sort of costume or prop buying because that was so fun. And another thing we did yesterday, actually, moved out my roommate.
Yes.
Whom I adore and love. But now it was me, Steven, and a roommate living together for 4 years.
I was like, now like you're like a normal couple.
Now it's like, it's honestly like I shed a little tear of happiness.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh my God, this is like a step in a relationship that's almost 6 years old.
Right.
For something to feel new is very exciting. And man, it felt so, it was so exciting. We came home after we moved her and we're like, oh my God, I can be as loud as I want. I don't even have to care. I could run naked and like hump the stairwell. And no one cares because it's just him and I. And if he cares, fuck him. It's our house. But no, it was really fun. And then I was like, we're going to have so much sex tonight in celebration. What did I do? I fell right asleep.
I was
after your Halloween party.
I was like, then you were tired from Halloween.
Yeah.
And from moving. I'm moving is very tiring.
Yeah. And my vocal cords are strained.
Yeah. No, I was so mad because everyone thought my Halloween costume was sexy. And I was like, this is not sexy.
But it was an underwear.
I'm dressed as a man, dressed as a woman.
Yeah, but
I had like a full
tell.
Clown makeup on. Like that made me scared that people were attracted to it.
Well, maybe they weren't looking at your face. But your face was very attractive too.
I was like, well, you know, oddly heavy makeup did bring out my eyes. So...
But sorry, Corinne, you're just too sexy.
It was just weird because I take Halloween so seriously. And I was like, no, I was like, this isn't sexy. I was like, this is just very correct.
Tommy was
a very accurate costume.
Tommy was so upset that no one knew he was Joanne.
It was great. I think I told him that was
he
more,
looked amazing.
That was more of a commentary on not enough people listening to Lady Gaga anymore. Yeah. Not commentary on him not doing a great bang up job.
Oh,
with
it was
the costume.
An amazing job.
Yeah, it was great. I knew. I mean.
It just made me laugh all night.
Yeah. And
Halloween parties are great.
There were two Joannes there, too.
There were two fucking
My
Joannes.
My friend Vicky was also dressed as Joanne.
Ugh. That was a great costume idea.
Yeah.
You guys. Sorry about lastnightcomedy.com. That's the URL to our website. And if you go there, our tour has already started. But all of our tour dates are there from November 2nd through the 20th. A lot of these dates are sold out. So... Look at we got a bunch of gigs in Ohio and in Chicago. I think there's still tickets too in Indianapolis. So go check them out and buy tickets because this is going to be the best night of your life.
Yeah, in Phoenix. Yeah, seriously, go and don't send us crying face emojis if you wait 3 weeks and then tickets are sold out. Seriously, like do it now.
What do you want from me, Daniela?
Yeah,
I don't know what else you want me to do.
Yeah, tickets are $20. We kept them nice and cheap, so you got that money now. Do it. Also, if you want more of this, you want to subscribe to Howl. Howl is the place where you can get bonus episodes of Guys We Fucked. We're doing two additional episodes every month. And if you see on Twitter, people tweeting about them really seeming to enjoy them.
Oh my God, our last Howl bonus episode was so scandalous.
Yeah. We're revealing way too much on these episodes.
Way too much.
Because we're like, it's fine.
That's what we thought when we started this podcast.
Yeah, so we're really giving out way too much information.
A lot of secrets.
Having lots of fun, and you're missing it if you're not there.
Yeah, go to our website and click. There's a logo that says Howl on our website, and click that, and that's how you sign up. Or just go to howl.fm/GWF.
And then also, there's merchandise available. I know you for years, you've been being like, make a t-shirt! And we made t-shirts.
Make a t-shirt.
And if you don't have one and you've ever squawked that, well, you're a hypocrite.
I'm just going to insult you for all the bad choices you may or may not have made.
Yeah. tonight's Friday, so it doesn't matter. Tomorrow, guys, live recording of Guys We Fucked happening at Caroline's on Broadway. You've heard of it. It's a very famous comedy club. Don't make yourselves look bad. We've almost sold it out, but we didn't sell it out yet, and we better fucking sell it out, okay? 2 p.m.
I'm going to look in the mirror and cry at myself if we don't sell it out.
Yeah, 2 p.m. It's part of the New York Comedy Festival. Going to be fucking fantastic.
We have an amazing guest.
It's so good. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ.
And then if that wasn't enough for you, later that night, Saturday, November 5th at 7 p.m., we're doing Nacho Bitches again. And I know you're like, oh, Corinne, didn't you do that last week with Blair? Yeah, we did. But we're going to be on tour that we talked about a couple sentences ago. So we need to do it again. Okay.
I love that you're fighting with the listener.
We got to do it again at 7 p.m. Use the code Nacho for $10 tickets.
Friday, December 2nd. This is like a ways away, but whatever. Is the Christmas / Jewish holiday version of
Hanukkah.
Hanukkah. Where
did you forget Hanukkah?
I did. I'm sick. I'm not feeling too hot. And you know what? Not a lot of memories, not a lot of facts are sticking in my brain.
Right.
Hanukkah's around Christmas, right?
Yes, usually.
Usually.
It moves.
Oh, God.
I float.
Anyway, on Friday, December 2nd at 7:30 p.m., Wendy Starling and I are hosting the December version of Glamour Puss at Zinc Bar in the West Village. Tickets are $15. We always have a bunch of amazing drop-in comedians like Artie Lang, Mike Birbiglia, Link Hoplitz. A lot of fun people stop by the show. We sell out every month, so get your tickets in the link of this description. I love you. And also, you know who else I love? My underwear, specifically MeUndies. Yes, MeUndies is the most comfortable underwear in the entire world. And yes, it's also a point in the copy that they wanted me to read. But also, I'm here to tell you that I've purchased so much MeUndies out of my own personal bank account because that is how comfortable they are. They are made out of a material called modal. It's a sustainably sourced. It's a fabric that is twice as soft as cotton. Nothing can describe the fit and feel of MeUndies. But once you try them on, you'll understand why they're called the world's most comfortable underwear. And if you don't love them, you can return them. No questions asked, for free. Shipping is free in the United States and in Canada. And you can always save up to $8 a pair if you subscribe to the MeUndies subscription plan. So here's what you do. You go to MeUndies.com/GWF for 20% off your first order. I swear to God, these underwear. I posted a picture on my Instagram of my ass in MeUndies and also to show off my cupping bruises. But that the MeUndies is really the focal point of that. Guys, go to MeUndies. Enter code GWF for 20% off. MeUndies.
You're wearing them.
Yeah. Yes, I am.
And also thank you to our friends at Casper Mattresses, the second sponsor of this episode. The Casper is an obsessively engineered mattress made in America at a shockingly fair price. It combines springy latex and supportive memory foams to create an award-winning sleep service with just the right sink and just the right bounce. We both sleep on Casper mattresses. They're very comfortable, can attest to this. Mattresses can often cost well over $1,500, but Casper mattresses cost $500 for a twin, $600 for an extra large twin, $750 for a full, $850 for a queen, and $950 for a king, which is honestly super cheap.
Very cheap.
And I love the way they're shipped to you. They just come folded up in a box and you're like, wow, is this a mattress or did they forget the mattress? And then you open it up and it's like a jack in the box, but you get a mattress. It's really exciting.
And then you sleep on it.
I really liked it a lot. It was fun. You can get free shipping and returns to the US and Canada. And also try Casper for 100 nights risk-free in your own home. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund you everything. You can get $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/GWF and use the offer code GWF. Terms and conditions apply. Also, like wherever you need to put something in, it's usually just GWF, like basically every time it's GWF. So just, you know that. Thank you. Now let's read some fucker mails.
Oh, you weren't going to do a little tagline? Because I had one in my head.
Oh, you would? I'm sorry. Casper.
Jerk off next to your girlfriend without a feeling anything because Casper mattresses are so smooth, but your partner won't even know you're moving.
Oh, man. It's just like you thought of that right off the tip of your tongue.
Flick your bee next to your boyfriend. Knowing. I did that the other night. Oh, I'm so bad. Okay. The subject line of this email is, I cheated on my boyfriend, but he's married. Hey, ladies. Big fan, yada, yada, insert into every email. Now the real scoop. My name's Zoe. Feel free to say it on the podcast. I'm 20 years old. Recently, I took a vacation to San Francisco looking for fun and stories to come home with. I ended up getting extremely drunk, 6 bottles of champagne later. Good God. I would die. And sleeping with a guy I had met while smoking outside of the hotel. Well, I don't remember most of the night. I only making out with him in every corner of the financial district of San Francisco. I do remember consenting to having sex with him. That's good. And that he's married with a child. I also have a serious boyfriend who I have been living with for months, even though things have been rocky between us before this. I tried to break up with my boyfriend after the incident without letting him know of my infidelity. My question is, I don't feel bad about either cheating on my serious boyfriend or the man being married. He also happened to be in San Francisco on business, and he only lives about a 30-minute drive from me. We've kept in touch only while he's at work. Communication cuts off around 6:30 when I assume he's home with his family. And we've made plans to see each other again. Does this make me a bad person?
Well,
here's my thing. Does the guy who's married have an open relationship? Does he have a deal with his wife? Because maybe, you know, a lot of people do and you don't know. Right. I think odds are he doesn't.
No, I know. I was like judging by the tone and the subject of the email, I would
say
that he doesn't.
But you should ask him. But, you know, okay. What you do with your pussy, you do with your pussy, right? If you are asking me, should I fuck a man knowing that he has a wife? my first question would be, well, does he have an open relationship? Does he have an open marriage? If not, let's assume he doesn't. Let's assume he does not. I wouldn't fuck him.
Yeah.
Because that lady is raising some kids and maybe she has no idea that her man's cheating, or maybe she's getting D on the side. We don't know. But I just wouldn't. I personally wouldn't.
It just also seems like a lot of drama. This is how people end up getting murdered. Like, for real.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a lot of drama.
There's no more drama in my life.
And I know you think this guy is spectacular, and like, he might be for the time being.
I mean,
but
is he
also
that spectacular if he's cheating?
Yeah, also he's not. And like, no one's that spectacular.
No one is that spectacular.
Yeah, just no one is.
Honestly, his wife probably thinks that too.
Yeah.
He's not that spectacular.
Yeah.
I don't think you're a bad person, but I think it's very wise to not sleep with a man knowing he has a wife in a monogamy commitment to her, a monogamous commitment to her.
Well, and also, like, this chick has a boyfriend too, so it's like,
yeah,
what are you doing? Like, you don't—
I get not telling the boyfriend. I understand completely breaking up with a boyfriend and not telling him about that.
Oh yeah,
because obviously,
sure,
you wanted to break up with them sooner, and then also that's just gonna make the boyfriend feel like shit, and you're gonna break up anyway, so don't make him feel like shit,
right?
You know, if he finds out, that's gonna sting really hard. But I am a believer of, like, don't twist the knife if it's already in him.
Well,
you know?
She didn't actually break up with him, though. She tried to break up with him.
Well,
yeah. So it's like, I think what you need to do is actually break up with your boyfriend.
Yeah.
Because, like, sometimes when you cheat, cheating is like your subconscious telling you, like, hey, I don't want to be in this relationship anymore. So you're acting out like a child would, basically. So do that, but then don't continue going and seeing this guy. Like, seriously, this is like,
you know how many other men are out there?
Yeah.
You met him at a bar smoking a cigarette outside. Do you know if you actually, like, tried to date, like, actively, like, pursued men on dating apps or, like, at bars, but, you know, going up to them, you could get another dude.
Yeah.
That would like you a lot.
It's just like, it's why.
And no wife.
It doesn't make you a bad person. It makes you a person who, like, doesn't respect other people's relationships and who has questionable morals. I don't think that makes you a bad person.
No, because everyone has questionable morals.
But it's not
in
like
some
award winning.
Yeah. I wouldn't be like, give her the Nobel Prize for Girlfriend of the Year.
Yeah. You're not winning a Person of the Year award,
but you know,
there's
a lot of us aren't.
There's worse people. It's fine. It's not a huge deal, but just, like, stop doing
it. Don't fuck a married guy.
Yeah.
If his relationship is closed, I mean, that's his decision.
Yeah.
Right? But don't get into that. Why would you go down that wormhole?
Yeah. It's just a mess. That's the thing. It's just a mess. And if the messiness is part of what attracts you to it, which sometimes people are attracted to that, that's a whole different thing. Like, ask yourself, why the fuck do I love drama? I'm an adult.
No more drama in my life. Play that song over and over again because she had a really good message.
It's just unnecessary, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. The second email is, help get me get him fired. Hello, ladies. I heard of your podcast quite late, but don't worry. I binged them all. You're both awesome. My name is, can we say it? I don't know. My name is blah, blah, blah. And I would like some help with a situation I've been in for a while now. This is going to be long. I won't apologize.
Don't,
just a warning. So when I was a freshman in college, I became an EMT on the college's rescue squad. I thought it was the best choice I've ever made. I love helping people. I work well under stress and I don't get grossed out no matter what bodily fluid squirts on me. Emergency medicine is the career for me. I absolutely love it. I see some hilarious situations that people get into and also some very serious and hard ones. I have seen people in their worst moments and prided myself and my crew on knowing what to do in any situation to help that person. We work really closely with the police and hospital, obviously, which allowed me to see the good they do and know the resources available to someone, especially females who've been raped or in an abusive situation. I had so much hope and thought that everyone I worked with was working for others and thought these situations were horrible. After a year of being on rescue, I ended up seeing this guy who was also on rescue. We started talking a lot and flirting. He would meet me outside my dorm so we could walk to classes together and whatnot. I ended up stopping things because I am a strong believer in not shitting where you eat. I also just had an off vibe from him and did not want things to go further. Lots of people already thought we were dating. He was in a position of power on the rescue squad, a captain, which is the highest rank other than the chief. I thought we were on good terms until I realized my name was taken off the list as eligible EMTs to enter an advanced class to hire my certification. He had the final say. I was so mad after learning this, but I was determined to win him over through my work. I started picking up extra shifts and coming in on my time off to help other people train together. He was always around during my shifts, even when he wasn't scheduled. I thought it was annoying, but I kept telling myself it was good because he would be able to see all the hard work I put in and then sign me off on taking the advanced class. After a month of this going on, I was training with him and the on-duty crew. The crew got a call and left with one ambulance, leaving us alone in the other. Since I thought training was done, I started to pack up the equipment, but he told me he wasn't finished. I said, okay, wanting him to see how hard I worked. He said, we are going to go over EKGs, the heart monitor. He told me to lay on the stretcher and be the patient. I was hesitant and had an immediate sick feeling come over me. Trust those instincts. I had no idea why, and I played it off as just discomfort from a past, quote, almost relationship. I asked if we can use the dummy as the patient, and he said no, because it was in the training room closet, and this was going to be a fast training, so he didn't want to get it out. I agreed then to be the patient with a relief that he said it would be fast. He's starting putting the electrodes on me, but I had a sports bra on and it's hard to get them in the right place with it on. He told me to take it off. I refused. He then held me down and took out his trauma shears and started cutting my clothes off. I fought back, but was too weak. I tried to push him off and kept yelling him to get off. Stop. No. He wouldn't listen. I mentally blacked out after that. I just remember the heart monitor beeping really fast because my heart was pounding. When he was done, I looked down and lots of my clothes were cut and he just said, quote, training's over.
Ugh.
Wow. That's fucking Academy Award winning.
Dickhead.
Before leaving the ambulance.
What a rapist.
I remember looking through my locker for some clothes before running back to my dorm. It took me a week before I had the courage to go to the campus police, but since they work so closely with our EMS squad, they were very good friends with the guy. From being on so many calls that dealt with assault, I had 100% confidence that they would help me. I was wrong. The first thing they said to me was, oh, you're part of the Code 3 club now. Quote, in parentheses, kind of like the Mile High Club, but with an ambulance instead of a plane. Gross.
Oh, so they think rape and consensual sex is the same. That's
the next thing was, quote, weren't you dating him? I felt so horrible and invalidated. I just sat in my car and screamed. I tried to go to another police office multiple times, but I got the excuse that I have to report it to the police in the town it was committed and that they couldn't do anything. Or I got the excuse that other police departments are competent, and if they say it's nothing, it's nothing. Nobody would listen to me. I took a month break from rescue, but I saw him around classes, and he always made the excuse to talk to me. I tried rescue again, but every time I was there, I would panic, which prevented me from giving the best patient care. I was terrified to do anything in front of him and experiences freezing on a call, even though I knew what to do. I tried to confide in friends who were also on rescue, but I was just pegged as the crazy ex and nobody really believed me. I was isolated and lost a lot of friends. I was known as the troublemaker and dramatic. I loved rescue before this, though. So I decided to transfer schools and rescue squads. Since the EMS community is so small in my area, it was really hard to get a job with another organization. Nobody from the previous squad would give me a recommendation, but I finally was hired with the organization in the town over. Fast forward a year, I'm working through all the feelings of guilt, self-doubt, blaming myself, etc., like most victims have to work through. I also had to convince myself I was actually good at my job. I went to therapy and was finally getting my life back together. I worked my way up in that organization. I saw him now and again in passing, but there was no contact after I moved until he got a job as an ED tech in the hospital. He was off rescue at that point since he graduated college and that squad only allowed students. His new job in the hospital was basically just the assistant to the nurse. I would bring patients and transfer care to him, which made me sick to my stomach, even though I knew they were in good care, in good hands in terms of medical skill. However, one night I get called to a 17-year-old female who was raped at gunpoint. We get there and it was like any other rape call. We are careful not to mess up the crime scene, make sure the patient is medically stable, and we try to get the story right. We are advocates for these people even after we drop them off in the hospital. Sometimes we even testify in court if it comes to that. We document everything we find, which is so important since we are usually the first people to come into contact with the person after the assault. All rape calls hit home for me. I can relate and do my best to give support and comfort while also doing my job. I promised her safety in the hospital. I told her she would be in good hands. Once we get her there and in a room, he shows up and introduces himself and asks to take her vitals. I lost it. I did not know what to do. I watched my rapist touch a rape victim less than an hour after her assault happened. The pain and helplessness I felt in that moment was worse than the rape itself. I told the staff that she should have only female caregivers, which is not unusual in these situations. Luckily, he was escorted from the room. I cannot forget that instance, and it kills me to know he is there caring for people who are hurt the way he has hurt people. I no longer feel that the hospital is safe for certain patients, and I cannot get it out of my mind that he is doing what he did to me in the hospital. I really don't think he should work there, let alone be free anywhere, but I fought and was not heard. I went to the police, to friends, to organizations set up for rape survivors. I went everywhere I knew to go, which is actually much more than the average person since I am in that EMS community. Either they didn't listen or they were only focused on making sure I was okay. Okay, which, yes, is extremely important. But my question to you is not the usual, was it my fault sort of thing. I know how to work on those feelings, but it's how do I get this person out of this environment? I need to get this person out of the hospital and in any setting where he comes in contact with patients like that. I feel it is my duty as an advocate for these patients. I will do anything, but I feel that I have tried pretty much everything. I don't care if I ever get justice for what he did to me. I just want him fired or just out of there. Then she signs her name and she says, P.S. I have plenty of funny EMS penis vagina calls you won't believe are real.
Which I would love to hear about another time.
Yeah, always good to end on a happy
note.
But
in this instance, you were raped in an ambulance and that person raped you in the ambulance is now taking care of rape victims in a hospital.
Yeah.
After you went to the fucking police and you went to the fucking EMS people and they were not helpful.
Right.
That is so fucking... Oh my... When I read that... email, I was like walking down the street or something. And I remember I yelled like, are you fucking kidding me?
Right.
I don't know if there's anything this girl can do.
I mean, there is. I mean, this is an instance of where social media can win. I'm pretty against like calling people out for stuff on social media.
She did everything she possibly could do. Like the textbook. Right. Here's what you do when you get raped.
She did the textbook things. But this email right here is why that girl carried a mattress on her back for the entire semester. It's because people aren't being heard. So then they have to do guerrilla tactics to be heard. That's what you need. You need to take social. You did all the right ways. Oh, you contacted all the people who are supposed to help us. All the organizations that are set up to be advocates. And you're absolutely right. So now what you need to do is you need to fucking take matters into your own hand and take it onto social media. Like that's what you do. The only problem with that is you run the risk of losing your job.
Yeah. Yeah. Because.
Which isn't fair.
Yeah, it's not fair. I mean, but also, one of the rapists in the UCB community, Aaron Glazer, was outed after the person one of the people that he raped went to the police and they didn't do fucking shit.
Right.
And now this person is no longer a part of the New York City comedy community because those people fucking went on social media and it spread. And I got mad and I posted about it and I contributed towards it and we all did. So fucking got him out of the community when we tried to the legal way, quote unquote.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean.
And it's also like, you don't even need to even put yourself in the forefront. I mean, if you can get it into you can get it into, I mean, there's a lot of celebrities who are really great with stuff like this. Rose McGowan, Kesha, those are people who are real advocates for situations like this. Obviously it happened to Kesha and Rose McGowan is constantly posting on social media, on Instagram. People with a following will help you. Get someone to write a newspaper article about it. Like those are the kinds of things that you do.
And if anyone's listening and you want to write about this, sorry about last night,
thebrandshow@gmail.com. We can put you in contact with the person if she gives us permission to.
Right.
Obviously, we have to make sure that's okay. But we've done it before with the fucking, with Caitlin, the hockey girl.
Yeah.
She was, she when she wrote us the email and she wanted to come forward and with her first and last name, and she talked to BuzzFeed and she talked to Huffington Post. And now the league is allegedly doing something about it. And I say allegedly because I'm not quite sure if they are or not. But hopefully they are.
No, this is our favorite thing to do. We're, you know, podcast vigilantes.
Hell yes.
This is, the, you know, this is the kind of change that we really need to see. And it's so important that people are outspoken about it.
I mean, I would go to a protest. I will protest this hospital.
Right. I mean, you just have to really make a stink.
Do you think if this girl goes to this guy who raped her and warns him that she's going to do this?
I wouldn't do that. That's how that just is.
Because then maybe he, I don't know what he's going to do. He's going to turn himself in.
No, guy is completely untrustworthy. That's the kind of thing where she's going to get like punched in the face or something. This guy's a maniac. He's a loose cannon. He's not to be trusted.
God,
you do this once. And it's not only that he raped her. It's the manner in which he did. It was violent. It was aggressive.
Go fuck yourself.
He was using his power in a corrupt way. There were just so many things that were alarming. This was not, you know, he thought that they were having sex, on a date and then she said no in the middle of it, which is also not okay. But this
that's also rape.
So over the top aggressive. This guy's not being trusted. Absolutely do not be alone in a room with this guy. He's unsafe.
And he should not. Oh my God. He shouldn't be alone with anybody, let alone a rape victim.
Right. Yeah.
Oh my God. I totally get. Oh, that's horrible. That's fucking atrocious.
Yeah. And it's sad that even organizations did it. But the thing is, it doesn't surprise me because sometimes when you're so close to the top, it gets so political that everyone is just looking out for each other. I mean, you know, I just watched Who Took Johnny, which we'll discuss in a later episode, but police are, not all police officers, but some police officers are part of like a high level pedophilia ring. So like, you can't trust anyone. And I never want to say anything that makes people scared to report a rape or uncomfortable going to a hospital. You should, you know, your first instinct in those situations should be to trust, but do not think just because someone is a police officer or works at a hospital or works as an EMS person that they are not just a normal human person who could be a fucked up piece of shit. Always know that and trust your fucking instincts. If something smells fishy, something's probably fishy. And it's your body and you always have a right to ask for another doctor, to ask for another person to handle your case. Like, you have the rights. It happened to you. You are a person.
Yeah. So let us know if you want our help in making a stink, because holy shit, we will fucking stink up the whole world.
Yeah. This person, I know it doesn't matter to you, but this person absolutely does need to know what he did to you was super wrong. He needs to pay for that. And he needs to lose his position because he's not fit for being in a service industry. It's not a service industry, that like a community
a medical
service.
Industry. Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely not. Yeah. Anyway.
So sorry that happened to you.
Yes.
God damn it. That email made me so mad.
Yeah, whatever. And you
like
should get mad.
A lot of them do.
But that's why we read emails like this, because you should get mad. Everyone listening should be mad right now, and everyone should want to fucking do something.
Yeah, and if we read every single fucking email we've ever gotten from somebody who was raped, if we read every email that we've gotten from someone who was raped in the past week, like, we wouldn't have time to interview anybody.
Yeah. Speak out. Don't be scared. If everyone just keeps speaking out, at a certain point, everyone's ears will be fucking bleeding and it will not be something that can be ignored anymore.
Yep.
It's been ignored for too long. All right. On that note.
Hey, but we do have time to interview somebody this week.
We have a movie tonight.
He's been on a lot of TV shows and award-winning films.
Yes. You might know him from the TV show Weeds. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff. He's also super outspoken about racial issues that we're excited to dig in with him today. We're going to talk some sex. It's going to be good. Please give a warm welcome to our guest, Romany Malco.
Watch the world blow up while I pour a slow cup, but no fucks. This is not a status update. Rape me while they rape us out of resource. Reports say we need more. Feed me Seymour. Why these fucking Eeyores cover cars in their arms? 5 alarms to the 5 o'clock. Give a new spot to a new thought. And they rock and roll to a rocket quote. This fucker's out of hope on the outer ropes. I need a smoke to choke that shit about my head. Meditate on media to fill the brain dead. Walkers learn to be talkers. Send them offers. Tabloids and TV watchers. Ugh.
police will shoot you dead and we will argue politics. Like a tragedy deserves to learn the sides of your dick. Enough to make me sick, enough to scare an epidemic. We are all hashtags and that's just the beginning. Let's go. Kill them all, kill them all, kill them all. You're only strong as your motherfucking cause. Kill them all, kill them all, kill them all. You're only strong as that motherfucking cause. Kill them all, kill them all, kill them all. You're only strong as that motherfucking cause. Kill them all, kill them all, kill them all. Doesn't matter what you saw, blood is splattered on the wall. A seven nation army couldn't hold the water in the bucket. An ounce of trouble trumpets, sipping tea and crumpets. Motherfucking dick rubbing Republicans on that clickbait. Tell me how that media dictates what he dictate. The lower class to copy paste on the Nazi hate. Tell our women how they feel about rape. Tell our babies at the climate say okay. That straight face need a straight jacket. What's cracking? What's
the action to the
tragedy? Well. Tell me I'm what to be. And I'm tired, but
yeah, so where'd you come from? What show?
We just came from two shows, the Chew and Dr. Oz.
Dr. Oz.
Yes, and you know, my lovely friend and handler, Daniela, who's got to make sure that I get into the field and get here at the right time. What was I the most excited about today?
Guys, yeah. We fucked?
Sure. Yay!
Yeah. Yeah, talking about it. I've now got Omar Epps and JB Smooth. Like, what? I'm tuning into that, like, right now.
Oh, JB and I have the same manager. Oh, I met JB. Cool dude. I fucking love him.
I really do love him. And, you know, it's he's so easygoing that you forget, you don't understand how actually savvy he is.
He is charming and charismatic. Like, he walks into the room and you're like, who is that person? Like, you just want to hang out with him.
Agreed.
He's amazing.
He's very intelligent. But he's, again, he doesn't have, like, an ego about it. He's not that Mr. Oh, I'm the big shot. So
yeah.
you don't realize he's a savvy ass businessman.
Yeah. I love that about him. He's amazing. Too. We're so glad to have you on.
I'm happy to be
our sex podcast.
I feel
what you
so
know about fucking.
What I know about fucking. Look, let me tell you something. You don't want to talk to me about fucking.
Yes, I do, Romney.
Let me tell you really quickly about me and fucking.
Okay, tell us about you and fucking.
I mean, you can tell us at length if you want. Yeah, we have an hour.
You don't have to be quick.
I'm a late bloomer in the fuck world, right? So what that means is that I had a dad who made sex sound like, my dad was, you know, West Indian, very macho. And he was like, you ain't fucked a woman unless you totally wore the brakes off of a pussy, right?
Whoa, so what does that mean?
It basically means that you made it so that the pussy did not want to stop. So,
okay.
So I was like,
I think I get that.
Right.
When her pussy doesn't want to stop, Romney.
Exactly.
That's when you have sex.
And so he intimidated me so much about sex that I didn't want to have it.
Oh, like, shit.
Oh, I just felt like there's no way I'm going to live up to the shit he's talking about. Yeah. There's no way, no humanly way to.
Is that secretly what he wanted to do, though, to avoid you having to for you to wait as long as you could?
My dad's been trying to hook me up with women since I was six.
Oh, six?
Yeah, man. My dad's been trying to, look, dude, my dad has completely, he corrupted the mind of this child when it came to sex. So I found it like a really intimidating thing. And so I started having sex maybe when I was 17. 16, 17. And then I had learned, it was funny, I learned a lot when I went to the military, like things that guys do and whatnot, you know, and girls do.
What to what?
But I didn't really learn how to make, just guys were just talking about shit that they did.
About women.
About the way that they masturbated, things that they had done with women.
Guys tell each other about their ways they masturbate?
Yo, yes. They really
okay,
do.
Because I was like, I was under this impression that guys didn't talk. Oh, to each other about sex.
I know. I was like, you're trailblazing through this. We need to stop and
I'm going to put the brakes on that real quick.
Put the brakes on this.
Get some more details out of you. Okay. What did they say?
Well, you know, just guys were just talking about like, but you know what? The way that guys talk about it isn't like, you know, it's not like some serious thing. It's like guys are cracking jokes about the way that they do it. So one guy might say, yeah, you probably beat off with, you know, with a sock and a blah, blah, blah. And guy goes, fucking close. And go fucking close. And the dude will say, what I do is, and you'll be like, get the fuck out of here.
You
really?
Fuck a mattress?
Exactly.
Wow.
No, but I've heard that one.
So you put it in between the mattress. I heard that too.
You take they take some kind of warm thing in plastic and they put it inside of a, like a sock that they double folded.
Oh.
And then they put it inside of a mattress, you know, and move it up.
In between the mattress and the box spring.
Exactly. And I never heard shit like that. You know, so here I was.
So you got to the Navy or the military?
Exactly. Up until that point, I was a little too macho to even consider masturbation.
What?
Yeah, I swear.
Too macho for masturbation?
Because I grew up in the hood, and in the hood, you hear brothers be like, man, fuck that, nigga. I get pussy. I don't got to do that shit. So you have to.
They were all lying. Even if you do get pussy.
But I'm an extreme personality. So if you tell me that you do 1,000 push-ups in the morning, I'm really going to fucking do 1,000 push-ups in the morning.
Well, that's why you're famous.
Yeah, you know, that's true.
Because I'm tormented and damaged. Yeah.
And you work hard because of it.
Exactly. And the industry loves to exploit that. But yeah, totally.
Does the industry exploit your sexuality?
You know, there was a point where there was an ad in like, not an ad, but there was an article about me losing my virginity at the age of 6 in LA Times. And because of the fact that the media was so stupid and willing to fall for that I just kind of let it ride, you know?
So what? You're saying that's not true.
you know,
you didn't fuck at 6 years old?
I don't think. Okay, there's an instance where definitely I had hooked up with like a 13-year-old babysitter when I was 6 years old, but I...
When you were 6? Was it a hookup or did she kind of molest you a little bit?
You know what? I was very viceful as well. Like I said, I've kind of been introduced early.
I think I was masturbating by the age of 6.
Yeah, right?
So yeah. I would have been like, I'm not mad at it if you want to touch me. But at the same time, should a 13-year-old know better? I don't know.
And you know what, though? If you think about this, when you were masturbating at the age of 6, it wasn't with an end goal, was it? It was like, this feels good.
Yeah. It was just like, let's explore this button.
And that's exactly. And that was my thing. I was like, oh, you know, this is what, you know, this would seem to feel good. And anyway, so I got caught like, you know, having anal sex with this 13-year-old woman. Girl.
Anal?
I'm really kidding.
I was like, damn.
I know. I was like, your dick couldn't even get that hard. What are you talking about?
6-year-old move.
No, but we got caught like messing around, like, you know, with our clothes off. And
I mean, that's also like childhood exploration is a thing. Like Lena Dunham wrote about it in her book. And then all of a sudden everyone's like, she molested her sister. When I was fucking 6, yeah. I had my best friend was my neighbor who was a male. And we would like touch each other's butts and play boy girl, which just meant like we pretended we were adults. And then he would touch my breast that I didn't even have yet. Right. And I was like, I don't know what the fuck this is, but I like it.
Exactly.
So I guess I hooked up at 6 too.
Exactly. And I really have to say that in my personal opinion, one of the things is somewhere down the line, we got permission to be open about it where a lot of people don't. And that's why we're sitting here. In entertainment.
Yeah.
And there's someone else who is like
crying, you know, molestation or something that wasn't. Yeah.
So, but yeah, man. So, you know, I told that story to Judd when we were doing 40 Old Virgin, and the LA Times just loved that. And I'm like, come on.
That's who doesn't what they play picked out.
Naked humpsies and smell your finger when they're 6.
Right. I know, right?
I mean, I was always in my baby book, it was like age 6 playing naked humpsies.
Yeah, I love it. Mean,
that sounds fun.
I still love that. I love a good makeout session, no sex. Let that build up, and then later we can go home and,
you
know, I like that.
And fuck.
Yeah.
You make out in public?
I love it. I don't care.
PDA King.
I love making out, period. So
making out is fun. But it's like a dance with your mouth.
It's like that's
right.
Good.
I got some jumps.
Yeah, it's like a dance with your mouth. And just also, it's just like, to me, it's like intimate, and you get really, really you can, you know, I don't know how to explain it, but it's so sensual to me.
It's very intimate. It's like, but like we talk a lot of times, like a blowjob or going down on a woman is sometimes seems more intimate than sex.
Yeah.
Cause that is that's a vulnerable thing.
Once you start, especially if you learn, if you learn her either way.
Their body.
Exactly. There is some kind of satisfaction you have to get in being able to give pleasure to that degree.
Yes. Are you a giver?
I am definitely. In fact, I used to be an overcompensator. And
what were you overcompensating for?
I was overcompensating because I was still under the impression I had to wear the brakes off of the pussy. So because of that, you know what I'm saying? I was an overcompensator. And it really took me time to therapy and meditation to like go, oh, wait a minute. Something is wrong here.
How would you wear brakes off of a pussy?
Seriously speaking?
Yeah. Like, what would you do?
Yeah. What kind of things did you try to do?
Okay. No. Okay. So I'm going to tell you what. I put a spin on it, which is dishonest. When my dad says wear the brakes off a pussy, he basically means make some, you know, to where she's sore, numb, whatever the case is. Right?
So make her come until she's in pain? Well, not in pain, worn out.
Well, I think that he was talking more from an insensitive place where he was talking from the perspective of like, just basically there was a macho thing about fucking a woman until she couldn't take it anymore.
Right.
But that's fucking. And so where I changed it was, I was like, you know what? If you get it slick enough, that's the same thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
I was just being an idiot. So In his regard, I think that he had a lot more to do with just being lasting forever. And you know,
he thought like his version of a man having sex was the man lasts very long.
Exactly.
But then women don't like that a lot of the time.
No, they don't. And you know,
it's like, you can stop now.
Exactly. I mean, you're absolutely right. In fact, I love the kind of sex that you have where you have a great intense moment. You have like a few great orgasms. You stop, you talk.
Yeah.
You do something and then you go back to it again.
Right.
You know, to where it's like, I'm just so God. I just got to thank the heavens. I am not involved with someone where I want to have sex with you and then I want to get away from you.
Oh, right, you know? Right.
Because that changes the dynamics of how sex goes. And I know there are a lot of single people out there who are just kind of getting their jollies and like, okay, let's get on with it. I like the long, drawn out, hanging out all day kind of thing. You know? And if you have kids, I guess that's kind of difficult. But yeah, and the short, beautiful, boom, you know, is a good one. I want heightened sensuality throughout, that's all.
Did you ever tell your dad that maybe his advice wasn't good and also that it fucked you up for a long time?
Yeah, totally. I didn't tell him that it fucked me up for a long time, but I would throw jabs at him. I'd be like, so with your, you know, 1,000+ conquests and your ability to wear the brakes off the pussy, I'm like, just straight up,
here's my therapy bill.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, what do you have to show for it? Like, what do you think you got out of it? And
a good question to ask. Yeah.
And in his later years, he was like, you know, absolutely nothing really. Maybe just a stroke of the ego. Maybe just to hear someone say that you still got it. And
interesting.
And he was like, you know, and he admitted, you know, it was a waste of a lot of time and energy and like unnecessary drama. He'd say stuff like that. And he even said, you know what, man, look, dude, 15, 20 minutes of... He ended up saying this seriously in his like 50s, like 15, 20 minutes. My dad died at 63.
Okay.
15, 20 minutes of like, you know, good sex. He said, you don't hurt yourself. Don't hurt anyone. So it was a man who'd grown up. It was man, you know, my parents had me young. So I got to witness him grow
How
up.
How young
well.
Were they?
23 when they had me, you know.
Okay.
And so, you know, I feel like I got to see my dad grow up to the best of his ability.
Oh, that's nice. Cause it's, you know, there are moments where we all realize like, oh, my parents aren't perfect. Shit.
Yeah.
Maybe that advice they gave me wasn't the best.
Yeah.
Fuck.
It's hard because when you're young, you do take everything like parents and teachers say like as gospel. And then when you grow up, you're like reflecting and like, wow, I don't know if that was necessarily the smartest thing or the thing I needed to hear at that time.
You're 100% on. And I will just throw out there that what I didn't know was that a child doesn't really begin thinking like in an abstract way until he's about 8, 7, or 8. Maybe girls might be a little earlier, but you don't have any. So everything is so extremely literal.
Oh my God. I remember I came home once. My neighbor said, okay, Christina, bye. We'll see you later. And I came home and my dad told my mom, the neighbor said he'd see us later. Are we going over there again for a party or something? Right. And my mom was like, no, you dumbass. Yes. But you're right. Yeah. Everything is so literal exactly. When you're a kid.
And I come from West Indian culture. My family's
Trinidadian.
And you
really wanted to break those, wear the brakes off the pussy.
I'm like, yo, so what the fuck? You know what I mean? And like, I come from a lineage, like, I don't know how far am I going here, but like, I'm not kidding. My grandfather, my dad, my uncles, they all just hung like animals.
Hung the big dicks.
How many of you know relatives' dicks have you seen?
Well, you know, all of my relatives' dicks, like Trinidadian
people. You've seen all their dicks?
Trinidadian people walk around naked.
With their dicks out? Good for them.
Women with their dicks out, it's attached to your body. Like,
well, yeah.
We take showers.
Wait, just literally no clothes.
When I lived in Laurelton, Queens, we took showers in our backyard.
Oh, shit.
My neighbors would cry.
I was going to say, were the neighbors okay with that?
You know what? The neighbors are probably way too okay with that.
They were like,
if all of your relatives were hung.
People were like, yo, man, this dude bathes in the backyard like an animal. Like, cracking jokes. And like, I really didn't understand it was a big deal until American neighbors started being like, what the fuck are y'all doing out there?
They were just keeping what they wanted to do, but their practices alive.
No, but what I was going to say is that we just, in Caribbean culture, and I can't speak for every family because there are variations, of course, but at least in my family and its
culture, nudity has
never been a big deal.
Like, it shouldn't be. And I know, I know some families that no one gives a fuck. Like, the nudity isn't weird. Like if I was sleeping over at my friend's house and their mom would be in her room and she would take her shirt off and no one would give a shit. And I'd be like, her boobs are out. You guys seen this? And everyone's like, who fucking cares?
Exactly. What fucked me up was more about what my parents said than what I saw. What they said was like, what?
Did your mom say anything about sex to you?
My mom was very prudish, but what was really dope about it was if I had a question, She blew no smoke.
Oh, that's great.
Mom, where do babies come from? How did you get the, how did you get this lump? She's pregnant with my brother, right? How'd you get that? What happened here? She break that shit down, break out the encyclopedia, show me how human beings do it, and then right show on me how animals did it, and be like, this is the difference between a reptile and a mammal, and be like, shit. Boom. And I was like, my mom, looking back, I'm like, my mom is a freaking G.
Yeah. That was the best possible way to handle that.
It really was. And like, and so what... I swear to you, we were just talking about this the other day with my girlfriend, and it was like, you know, I really think that my mother explaining these things to me made me extremely precautious about how I went about engaging in sex and always be protecting myself and whatnot for the sake of not wanting to accidentally get anyone pregnant. And I didn't even think about that until that conversation we were having the other day.
Right. And I think some people are hesitant to talk to their kids about sex because they don't want them having too much information. Right. Like, information is dangerous, but I think information is so powerful and you can use it to protect yourself. And like, just walking around, I'm sure you knew so much more than your classmates.
Yeah.
Did you ever have to like dispel any rumors that you heard people talking about because you knew the truth?
No, you know, it's funny because one thing that I learned, especially growing up, let me tell you something. Look, you grow up in a really poor community. Mm-hmm. And when I say poor community, I've been blessed to have lived in, to have grown up in the projects, but to have grown up in trailer parks and to have grown up in a, you know, Caribbean third world country.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like,
that's a lot of,
exactly. It's a lot of variation and a lot of like, you know, so you get to see all the different walks of life. And the beautiful thing about it is that you, if you want to act right, you know how. So I know what's appropriate. So if I were to, you know, express things or talk about sexuality in certain communities, particularly poor communities, I was basically setting myself up.
You know what
I
mean? Right.
I was either setting myself up to get ass further down the line or to be ridiculed. And so so a lot of things I just kind of kept to myself. And then I started, when you're in class and talking about that, I had to be careful because I started realizing that the way that we West Indians went about things wasn't necessarily comfortable for the way in which Americans went about things.
Oh.
Yeah. So I had learned, I was learning how to manipulate and learning how to curb and
very self-aware with everybody's boundaries.
Exactly.
Mm.
Which I think has benefited me throughout my entire life. You know, I can come into a room and take care of pretty much any group of people.
Yeah.
And then I had to unlearn needing to take care of people.
Well, I was going to say, that's a burden that'll weigh on you heavily when you become an adult and try to make everybody happy.
Oh my God. It took me probably well into my 30s to be comfortable enough around people to not feel, to be comfortable in the company of people who did not need to be taken care of.
Has that ever leaked into a relationship?
Every relationship. I mean,
yeah. Because I'm a pleaser, and I need to make sure you're happy. And if you're not happy, then that's my priority. But it's like, well, maybe they need to fucking be unhappy about something to figure it out. Like, no, you don't have to fix it, Christina.
It's true, man. My fucking, you know, my friends, they'd be like, my black friends call it, oh, this nigga got that Captain Save-A-Ho syndrome.
And then, DJ Who Kid says Save-A-Ho.
Save-A-Ho, I'm big time. You know, that. And it, by the way, Who Kid might have gotten that from the original Captain Save-A-Ho song, which was written by E-40.
Oh, he probably did then.
Don't save her, Captain Save-A-Ho. And then, you know what I'm saying? And then there's, you know, and then, you know, my white friends are like, oh, you have what's called the wounded bird syndrome. And then my Latin friends, all my Latin friends is like, no, that shit is called estúpido.
I love how every racial group has a totally different, right? But it's the same thing. I get it. Same thing. Yeah.
And like, you know, I was married and divorced once, and I married to help someone, by the way.
You married to save a hoe?
You know what? I can't call.
Well, not that she's a hoe, but in that sentiment.
Yes, in that sentiment, in the sense that we did a lot of our motivation for getting married had to do with, getting citizenship in the United States, right, being able to travel back and forth because a couple of her family members had gotten sick and she couldn't cross the border. So I was going over there and spending time in the hospitals with her family when she couldn't.
Aww.
So we ended up just getting married to expedite the whole process, and boom, she was able to go over. But that was definitely a Captain Save-A-Ho move. Mm-hmm. But I would never call her a hoe.
You know? Right, right. Well, no, yeah. I get you. Yeah.
So anyway, it is a burden. It does wear you down. And it was in that marriage and divorce that I actually began to understand that I had actually built, because of my personal sense of inadequacy in so many different areas, I was building subconsciously from the age of about 12, I was surrounding myself with people that I thought were dependent, because, and the reason was because I had my mother upped and vanished when I was 12. Oh. For the right reasons. Mind you, the other day she showed me a letter I had written to her when I was like 7, explaining to her that I wanted her to get her nerve and her spirit back. And if that meant leaving my father, I completely supported it.
Oh, right? Shit.
Wow.
How wise of a seven-year-old you.
I was like, they used to call me Papa. I was like, because shit. I was so wise.
I know, like, you're hooking up. You're giving your mom advice. Know, right? This is great. Just be free, Birdie.
It was a legitimate, well-written letter that I wrote to my mom. Wow. Saying, look, if you got to leave Pops, I think it's important because you have to, you can't afford to lose your nerve. It's what makes you
mom.
Yeah.
It's what makes her her. And she, before she's a mother, before she's a wife, she is a woman. She is her. And you need to preserve that and save that and nurture that.
Yeah, and she was one. And she, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, what at 7 do you recall witnessing anything that made you write that letter?
Oh, you know, I think my dad had some Ike Turner tendencies.
I was going to say, I'm sure your dad, he's telling his 6-year-old son to like wear the brakes off the pussy.
Yeah, exactly. He was very viceful, very unresolved. He drank a lot. Mm. He was an extreme woman. And you know, for my mother being the type of person who was more concerned with what other people thought, and being someone who grew up with a very unhealthy relationship with her father, I don't think that she was able to really gauge and understand how unhealthy that was, and how it was recreating itself in the relationships that she was having with men.
Mm-hmm.
And so her being spoiled, and her being the youngest, and her being extremely sheltered, she wasn't really gifted with the tool, and her being a model, she came to America because she won like a beauty contest, and they said they had to compete in USA.
Wow.
Her being, you know, living in this fairy tale, she just wasn't equipped with the tools. And this is why what you were saying earlier really resonates with me, which is that it's true. It's, you know, we interpret information as like, you know, a hazard with our children. When I feel like, the truth is, there's nothing you can do to stop your kids from getting in the shit, but you can arm them with the tools to dig themselves out of that shit.
It's such a good tool.
Yeah.
Information.
Information. And so, you know, giving, that's a problem that we have in the United States, which is that, you know, we are taught in a way to become assembly line citizens. And now when you go and you apply for a grant or whatever, a big thing when you check the boxes is critical thinking, right? Because what has happened is we're a society who we know how to memorize, and we need an equation that doesn't require critical thinking in order to, and this is why like there's so many tech jobs available, but there aren't people here to take them because that requires so much more independent thinking. And same goes for the way our entertainment plays out. The same way goes for the way in which we deal with politics and everything else. So forgive my tangent here.
No, but critical thinking is what makes like art good or bad.
Exactly.
And it's, to me, when I see any art that lacks critical thinking, I'm offended because I think it's fucking lazy and it's pointless. And why did you waste my time and your time?
Which is why I have to plug this product called the Critical Thinking Manual. No, I'm kidding. I don't know. But yeah, so anyway,
But that flows over to anything, everything in your life, like relationships,
everything. It's true. It's a big part of processing pain. I'm a firm believer that your pain is your pathway to your process. Right? We're in a society where you're taught to hide your pain, and by hiding,
especially if you're a man,
especially if you're a dude. We had this talk last night.
It's the masculine.
I think it's actually even worse for black men, though.
You are 100%.
Yeah.
Look, I can't speak for every man. I have been blessed to have grown up in a variety of communities, but I will tell you that in the black community, it's really interesting to me how we are told to mask our emotion, how we're told to man up, to suck it up. And then when we get older and then the real shit hits the fan, we're told to let God handle it.
How the fuck are you gonna, that is a weight on your shoulders that no human can fucking endure.
I believe that's why black people die so early, so young in America. I sincerely believe that what we have to internalize is a big part of it, man.
My God.
Makes you implode.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just watched the documentary 13th.
Oh yeah, 13th.
Holy fuck! Yeah. And I'm a person that I think that white people need to fucking educate themselves on issues that other people, because I think that you meet some, there are some fucking shitty white people out there. Ignorant, uninformed.
It is.
Comfortable with being ignorant, and it's disgusting and I hate it. And so I think that everybody needs to educate themselves on the history of everything.
We all do. We
yeah.
all do.
And, oh, yeah.
And I'll tell you what, and I swear to God, I'm not plugging this, okay?
You can plug it. Okay.
About a month before 13th came out.
Yeah.
I had released a video called The Racket of Racism. The video was 19 minutes long. I shit you not. It's at 4 million views on Facebook right now.
Mm-hmm.
And in the thread, there are people of all colors going, I didn't know this. What did we do about
good,
this?
Good. Whew, that's way better than a comment thread. That's a great comment.
There are
thread.
People that are like, I'm devoting my life to this. The white people.
Wow.
White good. People, Middle Eastern, you name it, Southeast Asian. And they're like, I'm devoting my life to this. Thank you. So and don't get me wrong, you had the people who came in and were like, because the way that my video is done is just kind of making fun of the situation more yeah. so than trying to be.
Well, comedy can be a powerful tool in educating people and spreading knowledge and also just making a point.
Exactly.
Because it's an entertaining way to receive the point.
Exactly.
So that's why I think people listen to this podcast is because we make a point about a lot of things, but it's funny so people can digest it.
And when it's funny, you give people permission to laugh at themselves. And yeah, unfortunately, yeah. a lot of people didn't grow up with that benefit.
Which sucks.
Yeah. And but I was saying that I know that when the material is presented without a chip on your shoulder yeah. and when it's presented from a very objective place, and also just from living in trailer parks where we're the only black family in the trailer park, is that people I know to this day who prided themselves on being rednecks, when people have human interaction and they are forced to see you as human, mm-hmm. their perspectives change.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't care how fucking hokey and corny I sound, that's the reality. I have had people who call themselves rednecks, and parents who call them, take up for me because they thought I was being bullied by other rednecks. Yeah. Ain't nobody gonna bully my boy. If anybody gonna bully this nigger, I'm gonna bully this nigger. It won't be you, okay? You know.
Which, you get what they meant deep down. Yeah.
You know.
Their heart was in the right place.
Right. It's just... I mean, I'm actually taking it to another level, but it's just that
seem to do that.
Yeah, I created friends. I had created genuine friends who understood suddenly that it's offensive to use those words, who understood suddenly and that I was just as human, who understood that, in fact, that I could help them with their homework. I have friends whose parents... in trailer parks, whose parents would be like, Jacob's not feeling right. Could you please come talk to him?
Hell yes.
Because they knew you. They got to know you as a person.
Exactly.
It takes a real monster.
No, the opposite.
Yeah.
I didn't feel privileged because the truth is that in our friendship, there was no black-white hierarchy once the friendship was established. Yeah. You know what I mean? And we kind of rolled together and we would roll. We go hunting together and everything back in those days. And so I'm just saying what's missing is we're being tricked into becoming these extreme individuals who should be afraid of one another. And that's fucking everything up.
Fear is a powerful tool. It's used in so many ways. It's used with race, with sex. And we need to stop letting it.
Yeah, agreed. And so really what started this whole thing was just you talking about information being a powerful tool in the long run, like, hiding, not talking about sexuality or whatever it is. And somehow we ended up leaping into this. I forgot what it was now.
Oh, well, we brought it up. It was about not being able to connect with your feelings
as a man, and especially as a black man, just not being able to. Because I remember I was talking to Michael Che a while ago. He's a comic, and he was saying, "Man, autism is like a white people disease." And I was like, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Black people don't have autism. They just go, oh, he's not smart, and they fucking put him in the special classes. Like don't." I'm like, "Fuck!" This was years ago that he told me this, but I was like. Yeah. Shit, that's
You saw the movie, Precious, they called the child Mongo.
Ugh, that's so fucked.
There was no,
so fucked.
But here's the thing, I'm telling you, it's, okay, so we're back on, so talking about 13th really quick, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the video breaks, the movie breaks down systematically how slavery has sustained, it's just basically gone from a private thing to a corporate thing, and it's the prison industrial complex. And people go, oh, but blacks have had all these opportunities, but once they see this, they go, oh shit, they haven't. Exact same thing applies to housing segregation, and I will explain as best I can, is that what happens is from the very beginning, suburbs were built for white people and projects were built for blacks and immigrants. And so what ends up happening is the way in which schools are funded is through federal, state, and your property tax.
Yeah.
Now, as you can see these days, federal and state are kind of like funding prisons more than schools. Mm-hmm. So they started to pull back. So if you live in a poor community, you get a poor education, basically.
Yeah, because your schools don't have any money.
Boom, exactly. Now, I've lived in Trinidad and Tobago where literally, I lived in a house, we were not rich people. And, you know, we had like a galvanized roof and everything. There was, you know, you couldn't keep a bat or anything from coming in the house. Mm-hmm. And because it was cinder block for, you know, for ventilation. Uh-huh. And it was like, yo, real talk. I got such a good education that I spent 2 years of my life not going to school, just hanging out with my pops, spending another year in Trinidad, just chilling, and still graduated on time in the United States.
Shit.
Damn. Yeah.
We got it. There's so many things so backwards.
Yeah, I'm not saying that you should not go to school or anything. I'm just saying that black people,
perfect.
Poor, not just black people, sound even clip. Poor white people, exactly. Even poor white
LA
people.
Times article.
Romney Malco says kids don't need to go to school in the US. Print it.
Yo, not me, actually. I want to say that it's Jonathan Kozol, or who wrote the book Dumbing Us Down? He said kids should go to school for half the time that they go to school.
Like, oh, really?
4 hours a day. Kids learn more from spending time with their parents. And it's true. That's what I was trying to say, is that we become better experts at, and this is why, back to critical thinking, this is why we become better experts at memorization. Mm-hmm. And like this false ideology than we do become experts at life. Mm-hmm. And that's why I believe people who come from other countries come here and succeed at a much better rate, because we're getting a false education. We're subscribing to it. We're buying into what the television tells us. Right.
Yeah. We're rewarded for regurgitating things in America instead of being a free thinker.
Exactly.
And just with the way with the election bullshit, with the facts that are just completely false.
Exactly.
Being thrown around like weapons. Because it's like, well, if I want to argue with a Trump supporter now, I have to be very well read on everything that's going on so that I can defend myself. But half the shit that I'm well read on is bullshit. It's so all... like, what is happening?
Exactly. And like, to me, this whole Trump-Hillary argument, it's like, it's a pointless argument, because ultimately the problem in our country is that we constantly had, time and time again, since at least since Nixon, maybe even Roosevelt, I don't know, who have just sold out the people for big business.
Yep.
You know, and so now here we are with two people who are pro-establishment. I'm like, what's it really fucking matter at this point, you know?
Yeah, and I learned about the Bill Clinton, the fucking crime bill. That was man. That was such a fucked bill.
Super Predator.
That was so fucked.
You would be surprised.
Super Predator, and then they showed a clip of Hillary saying Super Predator back in the 90s, and I was like, God damn it, Hillary.
God, I swear, if you get a chance, you want to see some really crazy shit? Remember the video that I told you they made, Racket of Racism?
Yeah, yeah.
If you get a chance, it's only 19 minutes. Well, that's a long time, actually. But if you watch it, it'll be shocking. Me and Ava DuVernay used same imagery, same quotes, everything.
Huh.
It's bizarre. It's bizarre. But mine is just like sitting in my living room talking shit.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Yeah.
But yes, exactly. And so I, at this point, I'm like, was it Joseph de Mascri? He's like, you know, yo.
Whoa, great pronunciation.
Oh, I know. I was like, ooh, say that again.
Joseph de Mascri. He said, a nation gets the government it deserves. Well, we already got our government. Pro-establishment. Bottom line, there's nothing you can do about it. And the thing is that the smokescreen is so off the chain. It's like, if you really want to fuck with your government, what you do is you stop buying from and spending money with the corporations that are lobbying for this government to do the fucked up shit that they do to you.
Yeah.
Right. Money is what talks. Money is powerful. It's when you start affecting people's pockets is when they're going to listen.
Yeah, so true, man. And so,
When does race affect your dating life or sex life in any way?
All the time.
How so?
Yeah.
How so? It's weird. It's so funny, because I was married once. Everyone's like, I get this, and people will come to my page and be like, shut the fuck up, nigga. You got a wife. You got a white girl at home.
Whoa.
And I'll be like,
Jesus.
What?
That was aggressive.
Like, or like a friend of mine will post something and be like, yeah, but he married to a white girl. So he don't, you know what I'm saying? So he obviously don't like black women. And I'm like, I'm like, how the fuck did they get that my wife, my ex-wife, was white?
Yeah.
Was she?
East fucking Indian.
What the fuck? They just want to get mad at something.
Indian, like my dad, Indian.
So, you know what I mean? Not white.
Like, so I'm like, well, where? But it's, again, it's the education of us reducing everything to black and white.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And
Is her actual skin, does she appear to be lighter?
No.
So then what?
They were just making it up.
Like so it's just out of thin air?
Like a fucking political argument in 2016. They're just making shit up.
It's like, but
I
got to be real. It's kind of what we do in this country. Mm. We just kind of reduce things to, at least in the hood, we do.
No, I think everybody does. I think that's such a common human thing with the way information is thrown around and the way that you have to like learn things faster than other. It's like, it's exhausting. It feels like the internet's yelling at you.
Well, if you make things up, then you don't actually have to know things and you can just adjust it to your own agenda.
Exactly. Your own agenda. Bottom line.
You had friends that said like, oh, you were dating, you were married to a white woman. No. So you're fine.
No. My friends are by far beyond that.
Now, would that upset you when people who didn't know you got it that wrong? Or
sometimes I would be like, you know what? Let me just check. But then I was like, I'm not going to give the United States an education on culture. I'm like, if you're that far removed from being able to discern between, you know, Persian, you know, Armenian or you know, East Indian, or you know, if
you're far, I'm like, too I'm far
like
gone.
You know what? It's like you can't save everybody.
I know.
Oh, so it's like they read the words East Indian or saw that somewhere and then in their head like thought of a white person.
No, it's just that they saw a person who didn't look like they had, you know, African. You know, fully African. And what's really crazy is that my dad is East Indian and Black Venezuelan.
Mm,
that's what you know, so it's like when people speak about or make the Indian joke, there's a part of me that's like straight up, like there's a part of me that takes offense to it.
That's like, yeah, you know, I get that.
In fact, any kind of like racial joke that isn't about like, I can deal with any racial joke, but a racial joke, that if it's strictly about a stereotype, I don't know, it rubs me the wrong way.
Well, first of all, it's lazy, it's hack, and it's just someone trying to piss somebody else off.
Exactly. And look, I don't mind racial jokes. I grew up hearing them about me all the time, and I would laugh if it was funny.
Yeah.
But I just feel like, for whatever reason, we as a culture could use some major lessons on culture.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, and that to me is what, that's where America has stripped us really well. Because if you go to Canada, if you go to anywhere else in the world, people really take pride in their heritage. And when you ask people where they're from here or where their family's from or where their heritage, they'll tell you North Carolina. This is South Carolina. Yeah. But I'm talking like, you know, seriously, you know, or, you know, are you, you know,
what country, what origin, what other country?
Yeah, are you from Senegal? You know, they don't know. And I'm like, how do you do that? Even if you go to Canada, people are like, yeah, man, I was born in Edmonton, but my family is from, you know, from West Africa, or my family is from Barbados. So, you know, we stop at North Carolina. And just in my opinion, it's like, we're American. Well, if we were fucking American, we'd be treated like human beings and citizens in this bitch.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
So wasn't that our motto? Land of the free?
All of that. So it's like, I love the idea of people getting up and leaving this country long enough or enough. My dad afforded me this luxury. I grew up being able to see America from the outside in rather than from the inside out.
Ooh, you probably got a great perspective from that.
It's probably why I live in Puerto Rico now.
Oh, right? You live in Puerto Rico?
Yep.
I totally do. Yeah, like, you know, there's a thing where you grow up, and a lot of people who haven't, but I grew up seeing people who look like me and look like my dad on the money.
Oh,
you
that's
know?
Fun.
So,
that's
you know,
empowering.
Black
yeah.
and Indian people,
yeah.
Dr. Eric Williams, and, you know, you know, all these different influential people were running the news stations, and they were on the money, and they were, there were statues of them. And so, and then I'd live in the opposite extreme, where when you ask your history teacher, well, what did Black people contribute to the culture? Arts and crafts.
Oh,
you know,
they built the country. I mean, that was one thing that they did.
Arts and crafts.
Oh man.
But you know, so I got to see both extremes. And for me, it just seemed more, you can't deny the racial empathy gap. It's a legitimate study that was done by, I can't remember who, what, but this study basically tells you that, you know, it explained that people tend to empathize with people who reflect their own liking. They did this test. It was really interesting where they were looking at Filipino nurses and nurses, white, everybody, all over the world. And what they found was two people suffering from the same amount of, you know, same amount of pain, and the nurses would consistently administer less morphine to the Black patient. And though they asked them, why did you do that? And they go, I didn't. But no, but you did. And it wasn't a conscious thing. And when they started evaluating it and probing it psychologically, they found that, honestly, people interpreted Black people as being able to endure more pain. It wasn't a malicious
wow.
thing.
Shit.
It's right, a conditioning, the method of dehumanization that it's been used to justify why Native Americans need to be, you know, killed and slaughtered. The same justification is being used for why blacks need to be incarcerated yeah. for using the same amount of drugs that whites use. And check this out. It's on record that drugs were pushed into the black community.
Oh,
it's not on record that drugs were pushed into the white community, yet whites have managed to maintain the same amount of habitual drug use in the United States of America. Pause. Yeah. What?
Yeah.
Well, what the fuck? Do white people got to one-up niggas on everything? You know what I'm saying?
That's exactly what I was thinking. You know?
Me too. Yeah. Didn't say it, but I thought it. But the whole crack bullshit, when crack came out, the same fucking thing as cocaine, but it was in a different form.
Exactly.
In the black and Latina communities, and the cocaine was in more in the white communities, and the fucking penalty on possessing crack was so much more than I was like, oh, I hate.
Absolutely.
But if I were a non-white person, I would probably, I would hate white
people.
You
would live in Puerto Rico.
Yes, that's exactly what I would do.
And that's what I'm saying. It's like, I feel more human. I feel like one day this happened. Oh God, I hope your fans don't think I'm a dick for this.
Oh,
who cares if they do?
But this is harsh. One day I walk into Whole Foods.
Let's hear the story.
Okay, let's pause the. No, I'm kidding.
And I peed on all the avocados.
Oh, funny. I wasn't Whole Foods.
You peed on avocados.
I did not.
Okay, good.
I did not. No, but I was walking into. Oh, it wasn't even Whole Foods because I've been trying to like pull back on that. So I walk into a grocery store. Because Whole Foods...
Was that a white remark or something about white people?
No. I just trying to...
I don't shop at Whole Foods.
They're opening one in Harlem. Does that make you mad or happy?
Well, I don't want to incriminate Whole Foods, but if...
Okay.
I'll just say this. I think that everyone listening to this podcast, if you are truthfully interested in interested in stopping unjust criminalization, if you're interested in stopping the prison and the private industrial complex from being so powerful in our judicial system and on Capitol Hill, you should go online and you should research what companies are benefiting from prison labor. And now when you see,
oh, that's a great fucking,
and then all you do is you just pull your money out. You go, okay, well, I'm going to change my smartphone because I don't want to support that company.
Wow.
And I'm not going to go to this place because I don't want to support any company. And you can find it. It's pretty easy. Just look for companies that benefit from, you know, free prison labor. The point that I'm making is that, I went into another store.
Yeah.
And, I'm behind these three ladies. It's two young ladies and beautiful ladies and their mother, who's also beautiful if they happen to be listening. And so,
like, right. I hope Romney talks about that time he was behind us in the grocery store.
Must be us. We were pretty and we were once in a store.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Every girl thinks it's about them right now.
I hope so. And the two younger daughters, one of them turns to me and goes, "You look really familiar."
Yeah.
And I said, "Yeah, I was your professor at, you know," and I said something. And she just busted up, right? She just started cracking.
Yeah.
And her mother and her sister turned around and looked at me.
Yeah.
And I swear to you, it was like, and they looked at me up and down, like, "You're not even qualified. Why are you here?"
Ooh.
So I didn't pay it any mind. And then she turned to me and was like, wait a minute. I think I know what this is. You know, because she recognized me.
From the TVs.
Well, I'm the first black man to escape on Cops. And so she saw that episode and she was like, "Okay, I'm joking." But still, she recognized me from something. Maybe it was weed something. And she goes, no. And then she said that and they basically looked at me and looked at her and they were like, "Enough of that." So the energy was so crazy. We were waiting in line to get sandwiches. I was like, "You know what? I'm going to just go."
Wait, what is that? What does that mean? What is it?
So it's, and by the way, you know, Cuban lady, right? And, you know, Cuban, beautiful, beautiful family. So I was like, "Okay, whatever's going on here, I don't know if it's between them or me, but I'm gonna extract myself."
Yeah.
I didn't like the way that I felt. So I said, "I'll come back. Everybody there, I know everybody at this store."
Yeah.
So they already know what I want. So I can just come by and grab it later. No big deal. So I go over to the salad bar. You will not believe this. I would say it didn't take 5 minutes for her to come, the mother to come to me and go, "Good afternoon. You know, my daughters," who looked like they were about between the ages of about 23 and 27, said, "My daughters recognize you from your movies and they wanted to know if they could take a picture with you." And I said to her, as you can tell. I said that's flattering. I appreciate it. My name's Romney, by the way. And as you can tell, and what's your name? Boom. She told me her name. I said, as you can tell, I know everybody here. I talk to everyone. But our nonverbal exchange at the sandwich counter, it really hurt my feelings. And because of that, I have to decline. The minute I said hurt my feelings, she went, And I could tell that she saw me as a human being in that moment. She saw me as a human being. And then she goes, she thought about it.
Well, I was going to say, you forced her to do some critical thinking.
Boom. Exactly.
Boom.
And drop she was mic. Like, I understand.
Yeah.
She didn't say, I'm sorry, but she's like, because in the moment you're on the spot, it could have become very confrontational.
For sure.
She's like, and then she went back to her daughters and, you know, I really didn't pay them any mind. I just scooped my sandwich and bounced, right? Because my mom was waiting for her, you know, she's waiting for her split pea soup. But, but the point of it is that that's the issue right there to me, is that we don't have human exchanges. So we sometimes forget. And it works the other way around too, where people just come up and jam a camera in your face while you're eating or something.
Oh, that's
and so we complain about politicians and we complain about the media dehumanizing us, but we're doing it to ourselves as well.
Yeah.
All day, every day. We talk about, oh, this bitch, I fucked that hoe like this, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. We're doing the same shit.
And no one who says that, like if they take a step back and we're really forced to reflect on what the fuck just came out of their mouths, especially if they had to look at the person that they were talking about and that person becomes humanized, all of that bullshit persona ego thing melts away. And it's like, you know, when we're in a car and it's so easy to get mad at the other car for, you know, for cutting us off because we're looking at an actual car.
Yes.
It's like in real life now, we're still looking at people as cars.
Yes.
We're not seeing them and we're not, we're still in this fucking, our own world with our head up our ass.
Yeah. But we're a very young civilization and no matter, let me just look, I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, but I'm just saying.
Neither do we, it's okay.
Yeah, from my observation, human beings are nowhere near as sophisticated a species as we like to think we are, right?
Yeah.
When it really boils down to it, we're very primal. Mm-hmm. And quite often, you know, we work against our better judgment. We have a very hard, seeing ourselves as being connected. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think part of it is for survival. Like we're very tribal, you know, but what's happened now is we begin to turn against our tribes, you know? So we're kind of like lost and out there floating around. And
we need a little music in our lives.
You know, exactly. I think, you know, anyway, I forgot what we were talking about. I always do that. That's what happens when you're tired. Let's talk about sex. I love talking about sex.
What's your favorite thing to talk about? Like what's your favorite thing about sex?
Well, like I said, I was a late bloomer, but my favorite thing it's Daniela, can you leave the room, please? No, my favorite thing about sex. What is my favorite thing about sex? I'm into love making. Like I really, really am into making love. So,
that's fun.
Yeah, it really is. And I'm like, listen, there's no time frame. There's no specific position. You know what I mean? But it's like when it's rhythmic and it's flowing.
Yeah.
That's so dope.
Sex can be so much fun. And I feel like when you take that route to sex, you're like, man, I'm making the best out of life.
I feel the same way. And I have to say, like, I'm a guy who loves eating pussy and licking asshole, but.
Yes.
But, thank you. But let me clarify though.
Thank you.
This is the weird thing.
Romney Malco loves licking ass. LA Times.
Yep. And maybe because a lot of that stuff is new to me. I've only learned about that over the last 7-8 years.
How old are you now?
I've been eating pussy all my life, but really learned about how to truthfully indulge an asshole. I didn't start learning that until maybe 6-8 years. Yes,
truly
it is a great art.
It's indulge an asshole.
Exactly. Wow. And you know what? That's, by the way, that's the name of my band. If you guys want to check out my
indulge an asshole.
Well, I appreciate. Do you like getting your ass eaten?
You know, I have to be honest with you. I've had it done a few times, and there were instances where I actually thought it was cool, and there were instances where I was like, "You're gonna have to stop that."
Now, what was the difference between the two incidents? Like the cool and stop that.
One felt very authentic and in the moment.
Yeah, I love that.
And at other times, it felt like At other times, I just felt...
It's like, I guess I gotta lick his ass
I think
now.
It's just, it's guilty to make your agents do stuff like that. I think it's just the
guilt.
Yeah,
yeah, because they're earning their 10%, you know, exactly. And you don't want them to have to lick your asshole for it.
You know, and so just sometimes... It's a performance. Like, I remember I was dating this girl. She was gorgeous. And the first time she tried to give me head, I was like, whoa. Hold up. Don't you want to know what I like? Because right now, I feel like you're sucking your ex's dick.
That's a... Wow.
Bring in some truth bombs.
Yeah. Yeah, I would like walk away from that truth. I'd like step back from that truth bomb.
Yeah. I was like, hey, check this out. Okay. This is the frenulum.
Because
okay?
Shit. Wow. You're educating. You break out the dictionary or your encyclopedia like your mom.
No, like my mom. I break it down. Sometimes people, you know, I find that some frenulum. People need a really anyway, I'm sorry.
But I get what you mean by saying that, like, sometimes a girl could suck your dick and they're not present and you know it and it just feels wrong. And feel sex, when sex feels not genuine and both parties don't want to genuinely be doing it, it's like, I don't want to do this.
Or just feel like a habit, like, oh, I'm checking in for another day of work, blowing another dick.
What time is it? Yes, that's the one thing I will say is, like, there are moments when you end up, a woman's on top of you and she's really getting off and you're trying to fucking choke her. And you don't realize that you've gotten to that fucking point. All right.
You're choking her. You don't even know it.
Yeah. Like, you know, you got a fucking hand on her throat and you got another hand on her ass, on her thigh. And you don't even realize it because you've gotten to this place of, like, it's almost like a power struggle. Right.
Interesting.
Right. Hmm. And so to me, the reason I bring that up is because
some women like being choked.
Right. But you can't choreograph that shit. I mean, I guess you can, but what I'm saying is when you find yourself
in
that,
it needs to be in the moment. Right. Yeah.
But this is you carving out an understanding who you're with.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And you will be surprised. So many strong-willed, independent fireballs that I've met that want to do nothing but submit during sex.
Hell yeah, because they want it to be the opposite of what they're... Fucking women walk around trying... Like, sometimes I'll walk around with this, like, I'm scared of shit.
Right,
I'm fucking in charge of my career, my life, blah, blah, blah. And yes, I am. But when I'm trying to, like, admit that, and I come home, just fucking slap me, bend me over, and fuck me. Like, you know what I mean?
Yes, and you know what? And that's the thing. It's like, there are times when you're walking through your day and you just need... At least for me, I can't be with, like, I swear to you, I'm not trying, this is not a brag thing. I'm just telling you, like, I'm one of those guys, the girls who say that they don't date guys want to hook up with, right? And so I get a lot of invitations to be involved with multiple women at a time.
Yeah. And a lot of orgies, three ways, four ways, five
Yes.
ways.
And I swear to you, you're going to laugh. It's not my thing.
It's okay if it's not your thing. It's okay.
Yeah.
Well, why is it overwhelming?
Because it's not that it's overwhelming. It's like, to me, I just enjoy sex more when it's intimate.
Yeah.
And also, I think of sex as kind of gross. Like, I don't want everybody's bodily fluids in my mouth.
100%. Well, it's also, I'm the co-host of the Two Whores podcast or whatever. And like,
Two Dumb Whores.
So everyone thinks that, like, and everyone just like goes to like multiple partners as like, that's the only way you can be innovative with sex. But there's so many other things that you can do on a one-on-one level. Like,
leather
I'm
gloves.
Very one-on-one. Like, even with my friends, like, I like to hang out with like one friend at a time.
Yes.
So it can be really intimate.
You can engage.
I can't, with too many people, I'm like, I just sit in a corner by myself. Right. I can't handle it.
And my friend will say, oh man, I know you don't want to be around a bunch of crowds and blah, blah, blah. And I'll go to crowds and then I'll find that cool person and me and that person will chop it up all night. And
we'll just
be talking about TV shows for all I care. But I'd rather that.
Totally.
While we're on this topic, I'm just going to just flow right into something that I think is very important. Because there are a lot, I've been with a lot of women who are, you know, my age or close to my age.
Mm-hmm. How old are you?
I'm going to be 48 November 18th.
Damn. Ooh,
very specific. Thank you.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah.
You look
happy
so
early birthday.
Young. You look like fucking 16.
I have a great makeup artist. There's really good natural hair dyes with no ammonia out there that you can use. And, you know, I have to say that living in the Caribbean helps. You know, but thank you. And also having, you know, like my West Indian genes, my mom still looks like, I've had people assume that me and my mom were a couple.
Oh yeah.
Oh, wow.
The same age. Yeah.
No, we were making
similar.
We were making out at this,
don't make out with your mom,
this Italian restaurant. And people were like, oh wow. You know,
hear that, LA Times?
Right. I know. But I wanted to talk about this specifically, and it's not about being choreographed. I just wanted to, you have a lot of male listeners too?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Hell yeah.
I want guys to understand this, because what happens is guys go down on girls and I don't think that they quite understand this. And I learned how to go down on a woman from a woman, right?
Mm.
So there's just something that I want to explain about the G-spot that I don't think a lot of people know.
Go ahead.
You don't just go inside of a woman's vagina and find the G-spot. The G-spot actually reveals itself. So what ends up happening is when you stimulate the vagina, I don't know if you noticed it, but inside the vagina, it kind of like expands. It starts going.
The G-spot?
No, the vagina itself. So for instance, you put your hand inside of, you slide a finger inside of yourself.
There's great visuals you're missing here, listeners.
Oh, yeah. He's got his finger ranked.
And the reason I'd like to do this angle is because when the juices come out sometimes, they'll run down your elbow. So you have to be at a level angle so that the juice just sits in your palm.
Just sits there. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like you're catching it.
Yeah. Sit there like lube.
But when you go inside a woman's vagina, you notice that it's a certain texture. As the woman becomes more stimulated, it tends to expand. Everything changes. So now, it creates this. So as that expands and you slide your finger along, you feel the texture of that woman's skin. It's somewhere along there you'll feel a change in texture, and it'll just happen for a blip. And usually that little change in texture is where that beautiful little spot is hidden.
It's like sandpapery.
Well, yeah, that's when
it can be. It definitely feels like every time that found the G-spot. That's what I was going to say. I've been with women that didn't know where the G-spot was.
I know where it is, but I didn't know the texture actually changes when the woman gets aroused.
Well, it's not that it changes. So think of it like this. Just think of like a deflated balloon.
Yeah.
Right? Aww. Okay. And then the balloon expands.
Right.
And now that the balloon's become somewhat taut, it's easier for you to find like, a variation in texture.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
You know what I'm saying? And so inside of a woman, you will feel like there's this natural texture, and then you'll come across something that might feel like you just ran your finger over a raisin.
Right.
Or you just ran your finger over something that's a little more coarse.
So it was always there. You just can't feel it when someone's not aroused.
Exactly. Well, being aroused. And so, right. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. Continue that.
You
thought.
Sure?
Yeah.
And so what I was going to say is that it's not about going in and finding it. It actually is, it's inspiring it to reveal itself.
How poetic.
Very poetic. You should have a greeting card series.
I like that. That was like, you had to get that in before we stopped recording. Like, this is this is a PSA.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Do you say that on, like, did you, at the end of Dr. Oz, did you also tell him that?
Please say this is a guys we fucked exclusive.
Let's keep it real. I probably said two words on the chew. I said two words on Dr. Oz. I said, what's happening? I said, I'm saving it all for guys we fucked.
Fuck yes.
That's what I said.
There was a woman who emailed us that said that a guy pointed this out to her, and then she started putting her fingers up her vagina when she was coming clitorally because it would actually like grab the fingers.
Yes, it tightens up. That's what makes the guy come.
And she's like, fucking put your finger in your vagina next time you come. And sometimes you'll feel like it grab. I'm like, that is crazy.
Yo, it's my favorite thing. It's like, nothing feels better than the vagina contracting as the woman's having an orgasm. This is what I was saying. Like, I really like that fucking feeling.
Good for you, Romany.
Especially squirters, they'll squeeze you out. So you kind of with the movement and you got to, and you stay there, you kind of help enhance the situation a little bit. I fucking love
that.
You
should teach a class or write a book.
Better than a woman that's coming on your fucking dick and your balls are all wet.
Oh,
shit. And you're making out and you got another fucking finger in her asshole and she's shaking and you can feel her.
Wow,
fucking,
you're a great lover.
Her goosebumps just everywhere. Yeah. Like, that makes me feel like fucking Conan, whatever Conan is.
Drop the mic. What a great ending.
That's a great ending
to this podcast.
And on that note, what do you want to promote? Because
everyone's ears
and we will watch whatever you're doing.
What's your phone number? Just give your phone number out.
What's your email and your address?
Oh man. I want to say one to both of you. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for doing it.
You girls are what I consider like quintessential comedy, in the sense that it doesn't feel like you're searching for a joke. You're searching for the truth, and it's funny.
Wow.
The journey is funny.
Romany. We have to use that quote.
Yeah, I'm going to put that on our tour poster. Yeah.
And I got to be real. It annoys me when I see people that are constantly trying to find the joke.
Oh, because that's not fucking funny.
It's not.
No, that's our motto. Guys, we fuck. No jokes. Joke free.
I like that.
It's a joke free environment.
Just truths. No jokes. Just truths.
Just truths. I like that. No jokes. Just chokes. I don't know. Anyway, so,
anyway.
So with that said, one, I really am excited and honored to be here with you two ladies.
Oh,
it feels
that
really,
means so
really
much.
Good
thank
to me.
You
know what I mean? I saved it all. What did I say?
Danielle confirmed.
Right? Danielle can confirm it. And so, long and short of it is that I am involved in a project that's very passionate. I'm very passionate about, which is called Prison Logic. And okay. It's about a character that I created in 2000 and I've been doing online for almost 10 years. He's an ex-convict turned motivational speaker. And a lot of what we've discussed about the importance of processing your pain, knowing how to process your pain, knowing how to forgive, how to find resolution, how to accept people as they are, and find a way of being free and finding a way of living a life of purpose and redefining success and all these things.
Yeah.
This life coach teaches, but he's a guy who spent most of his life in jail. In prison.
Interesting.
So
I like
he's coming
it.
From a very institutionalized perspective. So his shit is fucking wrong. But it's the people I grew up with. I grew up with people who had the best of intentions. They were just skewed as fuck. Like my dad told me, I'm going to tell you now, if you really think about getting married, cheat first because they going to do it.
Whoa.
You know what I mean?
I'm so sad your dad didn't write a book before he passed. I mean, like some kind of like table advice book.
Yeah, right.
Mr. Malco's Book of Truths. Yeah,
oh my goodness.
So, this guy is that version of that, but of course with a much more resolved perspective on things, and his quotes are really open-ended and kind of funny sometimes.
So where can we get this? Where can we watch it?
Just go to prisonlogic.com. Get yourself an earful. Yeah, and like it's a crowdfunding campaign that was, the first round of funding was so successful that we were like, okay, let's continue this. And let's make a bigger movie. I've had so many celebrities say, yo, I'm interested in being involved. I want to get down, you know?
No,
so
great.
I'm like, I'm going to, you know, you have SAG minimum. You have to pay them a certain
amount.
Right,
right, right.
And so we
want to raise that money.
We want to raise that money. And so like, here we are. I think we're like at 180 something thousand. We're going for 350,000 at this point. And you know,
if we go to prisonlogic.com, is that where we find where to donate?
Yes. Go to prisonlogic.com. You can make a contribution there. And also I've been uploading his videos there because they are funny and they are insightful. It's talking about like, he had this one about why poor people shop so much. And he's explaining how it's a byproduct of a damaged self-esteem. And you know, that we haven't resolved and we should spend more money, getting therapy and working on that.
Working on ourselves.
Exactly. And he explains like more than 50% of plastic surgery recipients earn less than $50,000 a year.
Holy
or more
shit.
Than some, or 80% even. I don't know. But anyway, so I have to, cause you have to do all this research to do these things. Yeah. And I know we got to wrap this up, but anyway, that's all I wanted to say is that Prison Logic is my passion project.
That's
and
awesome.
I'm excited that people have been so supportive, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to plug it.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. And we like that. This has been Guys We Fucked, the Anti-Slut-Shaming Podcast. We'll talk to you next Friday.
Take that herb to my face is what he said to me. Angels told me don't do that, no, 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 no. You won't go very far, I said. You don't know me, then hopped in that car and I snapped. Mad with a shit, bad with a pack full of bad wood when I spit. Rip, man, I've been chillin' all day. Man, oh man, we been living on this. I know, man, when I got the spliff, I cop the zip, I got the lift and then I go. Man, oh man, I go all in for it, and I'm causing my hand and I'm never gon' fall. Like, man's down with the goatee. Man, my gang gon' flee. Look at it bleed, nigga, little bo pee. Man, I'm a monster, quick with the flow, Street Fighter, E Honda. Man, I'm like Blanca, man, I'm just a monster, 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 monster. Man, with the.